Well, welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys. iTunes, 5-star ratings. We want them, we need them, we have to have them. Brian.
Back from the dead, Mike. I was dead. I died.
Brian died, has been resurrected, and is ready to pod. That is
I had a heck of a
right
cold.
Now.
I had like a 2-week cold, Mike.
That is my move, though, actually. My move is to have a 2-week cold.
Like a 5-month cold.
I was thinking about it already. I was thinking about, oh, it's going to be happening soon, and am I going to do the correct things to prevent it from happening? I don't think I can. I don't know what it is. It has not been
time to eat all those oranges to make up for all that time.
Brian, the Nets have played basketball games since we last spoke. Did you know that?
I did. I was, you know, on my deathbed watching them pretty scrupulously, you know, as ever. So I have lots to say about them, obviously.
Just to recap you all, if you haven't been following the Nets because it's holiday season and people may have been doing other things besides sitting in front of the TV and watching the Yes Network, which is what you should have been doing. The Nets won before Thanksgiving on Tuesday night. They beat the Miami Heat. The Heat did not have any point guards, and the Nets won that game on the road gorgeously. Lost to Dallas, lost to Minnesota, and then the backbreaker on Sunday night, to the 76ers. Brian, diagnose the problem for me. Play doctor. What's the issue?
Oh, boy. So, again, this is a conversation we're going to have all season long. I don't even know if we should broach it, really. But, like, people on Nets Daily just want to be blaming the coach for this. They want to be blaming Kenny Atkinson. People on Twitter want to be blaming Kenny Atkinson. I'm not sure what it is about. Maybe I can't tell what's going on. I mean, obviously, when you're racking up some losses, it's pretty easy to blame a coach. But falling into this logical trap is something that we have done in the past, probably shouldn't do right now. You know, let's hold off on that particular claim for at least a little bit longer, guys. I don't want to even get into why I think it's. I mean, I should get into why I think it's a little bit crazy, but it's crazy for a variety of reasons. Like, because there's this logical fallacy where it's like, there's recently a really great article on Nets Daily about how we rank like 25th in defensive rating or something, and people will be like, well, that's obviously on the coach. That's a coaching failure. And meanwhile, they're like 10th in offensive rating, and you would also chalk that up to a coach if you were being charitable. But like, I don't really do it that much for either. I mean, I think offensively, I mean, yes. In both cases, but this is a personnel issue, people. We have Jared Allen as our only big man, and if you have a halfway decent coach, they're going to get him into foul trouble, and then Ed Davis is your backup with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson backing him up. It's a bad situation. It's a bad situation defensively. It's not ideal. I had people talking about starting Ed Davis next to Jared Allen. Okay, great. So then who do you have coming to spell those two? You have Rondae Hollis-Jefferson playing both the 4 and the 5 for two guys. It's just we have we're pretty light at that position, Mike. Is that true or false?
Very true. And you know, so I would like to see a little Ed Davis, Jared Allen together just for like moments, because you could like put them on the floor together for 4 minutes, but that is, you're saying it's risky. It's risky because if Jared Allen gets fouled out, then it's Ed Davis, and if it's just Ed Davis, and Ed Davis is going to be attacked mercilessly because the other team knows the backup, as you're saying, is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or Kenneth Faried, which it's still kind of interesting to me that he hasn't gotten like really any run at all. I'm with you, man. Like, I don't understand. Like, I've had problems with what Kenny does in the past, like you would with any coach. Like, I'm sure even Warriors fans would be angry with what Kerr has done at times with the team. But what's been happening isn't a case of the coach sabotaging the team, you know, an accidental sabotage. What it is just that, and it sucks to say, it's just the talent difference. You're missing your best player in Caris LeVert. And that unique player, which is a guy who can handle the ball, who also is probably your best defender, you know, perimeter defender for sure. You're missing that, and the guy who scores at the end of the game for you. You're missing that. He fills all those roles. He's gone. And it sort of, you get your mind tricked by the way the Nets play basketball, because it seems like you can just remove a part. You put another guy in, you give a few other guys more minutes, and that they are just going to keep rolling and firing threes. It's the four moments a game where Caris LeVert would have helped.
There's a complicated matrices here, right? It's not just that you're taking out your best player. That player also affects the performances of all the players surrounding him, right? So do you think it's just a coincidence that Joe Harris's numbers have fallen off a cliff since Caris LeVert's come out? I mean, there's been a regression to the mean, of course, with Joe Harris, but the guy shot 25% in the last five games. He went 8 for 30. It's not good. And, I mean, outside, we don't have to go on a big Alan Crabb, you know.
Actually, I have. So I'm debuting a new segment today, Surprising Stats with Mike Smeltz. And in it, Alan Crabb is heavily featured.
Good.
Let me just dive into these Alan Crabb stats. Because,
wait, let me just say one more thing about.
Yeah, you go.
Okay. Damari Carroll also has come back to play. He's coming and playing, like, you know, 25 minutes a game now, 18 to 25 minutes, has not looked himself. I just want to put that out there. That's a lot of minutes for a guy that's not looking quite himself yet. So, yeah. Anyways, that's my last little point about that.
Well, okay. And before I get to my Alan Crabb stats.
Well, that was Damari Carroll.
But what I'm saying before I move on to the Alan Crabb, because I know people want these Alan Crabb stats because it's going to make them so happy to hear them. There is a thing, the one thing about Kenny Atkinson, which is definitely that you could attack, which I won't, but you could, is the fact that, like, Alan Crabb is still getting 20 to 25 minutes a game, that a guy like Damari, who hasn't really played all that well, is getting multiple minutes, but that is just like the overall guideline of how this team is going to be run. Like, no matter what, no guy is going to get more than 30 minutes a game. There's going to be a deep bench. You're going to be playing most players. Pretty much 10 guys are going to be playing 20 minutes a game. And then it just is allocated differently in terms of whether it's 28 or just 20 or whatever it's going to be. You know what I mean? Most teams don't operate this way. Most teams don't. If a guy is bad, like Alan Crabb, they don't typically continue to get all these minutes. But Alan Crabb is getting these minutes because the mission of the Nets is still to be development first, big picture. You know, we're going to keep, like, moving forward. And hopefully by playing Alan Crabb, even though he's not playing well, they hope that the Nets then, you know, that he emerges finally by the end of the season, which I don't think is going to happen.
I think Kenny Atkinson has done a very good job of presenting himself as this apolitical, Tom Tibbs-style, just-win-at-all-costs kind of guy. And in reality, he's very much into playing the politics. There's a reason why D'Angelo Russell only played his first, like, 34-minute game just the other night. You know, he doesn't play that many minutes because there's not a huge incentive from the grand scheme of things perspective. You know what? So he gets... you're going to play more minutes. You're obviously risking the fatigue and the injury effects of that, yada, yada. He's already had his issues with that. But also, what do you stand to him for him, like, unloading on teams where, you know, the odds that we're going to win, not super great, and, you know, the benefits of him performing well don't really benefit us exactly that much, right? You're increasing his value, making the market for him a lot more competitive. Potentially, you know, I'm not saying that this is like a tank, right? I'm not, don't get it wrong. I feel like people, like, in, you know, invoke the tank terminology a little bit too willy-nilly. I think that this is like pragmatic, slightly political posturing that he does on a pretty regular basis. And people often, like, question, like, why he does certain things. I think if you just take that little leap in logic, you could say, okay, well, there's, you know, he's thinking about 2 years from now, 3 years from now. It's not that crazy, I don't think.
I just think still the frustration is the expectation level going into the year was higher than it had been in the past 4 years or whatever you would say it is. And but this team is still being operated in a holding pattern, long-term view kind of way, and it's being coached in that kind of way. Mm-hmm. The clearest example of that is, you know, guys who, again, Alan Crabb shouldn't be getting as many minutes as he's getting. There's no way in the world. Here's my Smeltz's surprising stats. You ready for it, Brian? This is going to curl your hair. Your hair will be absolutely curled by the time we're done with this. Okay. So, well, first one, which is a weird one, is that you would think Crabb would be a bellwether for this team. That if he plays well, they win. The Nets win. If Alan Crabb does not play well, the Nets lose. In fact, the Nets play better when Alan Crabb shoots a worse percentage from the field and scores less. Who knew? That obviously is a dumb stat, but it's a fun stat.
Can you see how we came to that statistic?
Yeah, it's literally ESPN.com. When you go to, like, their player stat page, for some reason, one of the pullouts, they very few ESPN stat page. I will slam them. Not that good. Not that great. And when you go to, but when you go to the stats, one of the things they show you is wins, how this guy does in wins and how this person does in, when their team loses. For some reason, Alan Crabb plays better when the team loses. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Here's the stat, bro.
Okay, good.
One big one. Okay.
This is a different stat from what, or do you want to talk about that one you just talked about?
Nah, that, well, I'm tossing that away.
The way that I would explain away that is that he only starts shooting when the game is out of hand. That's sort of my feeling about Alan Crabb.
Okay. So here is the thing, okay? There are 55 players in the NBA who shoot at least five threes a game, okay? Mm-hmm. Alan Crabb is one of those 55 players. Alan Crabb has the lowest points per game of all of those 55 players. He also has the fewest number of assists per game of all those 55 players. He's also in the bottom third in terms of rebounds a game, which is three, which bottom third's like, okay, that's not embarrassing, but three rebounds a game illustrates that he's really not contributing much on that end. Those stats put together paints a picture as he is the least valuable high volume shooter in the entire NBA. And I talked to you, we did the stat last year, and I want to pull it out again, and I want to actually do the statistical run, and I got to figure out exactly the perfect phrase for it. But it's like least valuable, highest paid player, okay? The least contributing, highest paid player. And I'm pretty sure it's mostly going to be beyond guys who are like Timofey Mozgov, guys who actually play basketball, it's going to be Alan Crabb. Alan Crabb is the least productive high-volume shooter in the NBA. And we keep like, there's like this weird emotional thing with Alan Crabb, I think. Brian, I don't know if you feel this way. It's like, you don't want to kill the guy because it's so obvious that the one thing that he's supposed to do, he can't do. His whole value is tied up in the one act of shooting a three and making a three, that it is almost painful to make fun of him, or it's like painful to even point it out anymore. I don't even know if there's been enough conversation, though, about how much of a disaster that trade was. We've gone through it a million times. The reasoning behind it was that Andrew Nicholson, which is who the Nets traded away to get Alan Crabb, would also have been dead money. And they get Alan Crabb for free. The Nets were in a desperate situation to begin with. They weren't going to do anything with that salary cap space at that time. So they used that salary cap space at the time for a guy that they originally tried to sign anyways from Portland. They give up a guy who they don't want for a guy who they kind of do want at a higher salary. All that's understood. I love Sean Marks. Love what he does. I just think, like, this trade, it can change, but it ends up being one of the worst trades in the past 5 years within the NBA. I can justifiably say that. I feel like I'm now on firm ground to say that. Of course, like, Alan Crabb could suddenly blow up, and, you know, at the end of last season, he blew up and had like 40% from three or whatever it was after the All-Star break. And that's all the Nets need from him. But I can also justifiably say, like, I'm pretty comfortable in the fact that he's not going to be worth the amount of money that he's getting paid. And it's really going to hurt into next season when the Nets sort of want to they want to make some kind of free agent signing, some major free agent signing, whoever that is. Alan Crabb's $18 million a year is going to hurt that fact. So that's my whole preamble.
Good.
Sorry about that. So there you go, Brian. You want to talk?
Give me your stats. What do you have?
What? Alan Crabb?
No, the other ones. You said you had other ones or no?
I have small baby ones. Okay, here's a couple of small baby Smeltz stats for you. And I'll never say Smeltz stats again after this pod because it's already lame. Okay, who do you think is the second best three-pointer on the three-point shooting percentage shooter on the team this year, Brian? Who do you think that is? And I'll tell you the answer.
Sorry, say it again.
Who do you think shoots the best from three, the second best on the team? Who has the second best three-point percentage on the team?
The second best.
Who, when you're watching the game, you think, okay, you know Joe Harris is number one.
On the season, I guess probably D'Angelo Russell.
Shabazz Napier.
Oh. 43%
shooting 2.5 threes a game. Not bad from your backup point guard. Ed Davis. We all love Ed Davis. I love him, contributor.
No, does that mean that Shabazz is the second best point guard of the team, would you say?
That means he's number one. D'Angelo's obviously fourth, still behind Caris LeVert.
Still getting killed. Remember the Burroughs. Never forget the Burroughs explanation. I stand by it. I mean, I did it then. Obviously, he's done a lot better in recent days.
What, D'Angelo?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Ed Davis, one last stat for you. Ed Davis is eighth on the team in blocks per game, even behind Jared Dudley. That's a shocking statistic for a guy that's thought of being a low post protector, and I think that also goes to what we were talking about earlier. Obviously, blocks isn't everything. There are, defensive field goal percentage, at the rim, which I know Ed Davis ranks very highly at. But overall, people clamoring for more Ed Davis in certain moments against big men, he is not the shot blocking big man that we think he is. Like you just assume that a guy like he is, he's just not that guy. He's a position defender. He's a gritty guy, but he's not like a rise above the hoop, block your shot, and intimidate guys going to the hoop. That's not who he is. He's just a crafty defender. So there you go. Those are my stats. Those are your Smeltz stats, sponsored by Chevrolet. There you go.
Nice. Nailed it.
Email, or you want to roll on to something else?
Yeah, we can pick out some emails.
All right, let's do it.
So first up, your boy Ronald Kaplan, becoming a regular. Are we getting close to the insanity of playing Dudley so much that it compares last year to AC? At least last year, there were little options, but the idea that Dudley plays more minutes than Jefferson and Kudix, rots on the bench, is insanity. Please explain, Ron. How do we explain this phenomenon, this crazy phenomenon, Mike? How do you explain it?
I think it's just the classic veteran presence. Kenny Atkinson enjoys having that presence out there. He is bulkier than Karutz and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. He presents more bulk against starting fours than those two dudes. He plays in a lineup that doesn't actually need that much more scoring, which is the starting lineup.
Here's my explanation for it. I feel like Kenny Atkinson was hoping for a turned ankle, some old guy injury that'll keep Dudley just out for one or two games in order for that guy to Ferrande or someone to just sort of seamlessly step into that position. It just hasn't happened yet. It was about to happen when he dislocated his finger for a hot second, but then he was like, nah, I'm fine. Everything's fine. So Dudley has got a death grip on this because he doesn't want to do the thing where it's like in professional wrestling, you want there to be some kind of, TKO, right? A technical issue or someone gets disqualified, right? Instead of just properly losing the position out on your back, with somebody's finisher, getting people's elbowed in the face and losing the position. You want there to have been some kind of, riffraff that led to somebody taking that position just for the, just for keeping the vibe positive in the locker room. That's what I think.
Yeah. And it's
as soon as Jared Dudley misses a week, he's gone from the starting lineup. You'll not see him again.
It's still surprising that I want to move back to when he was brought onto the team. He was brought on sort of within the flurry of Fareed, Darrell Arthur, and Jared Dudley was the three, four men, the three power forwards that were brought onto the team within the offseason. And if I had to rank those three players, Dudley would have been at the bottom in terms of guys I thought would get minutes. I was sort of kind of pumped about Fareed being on the team. I know that he hadn't done anything, but I was excited just to have a Enes Kanter-light big man who just puts up points and rebounds and obviously destroys your team defensively because he's, I guess, allegedly not a team player defensively. But this is another side of how weird the Nets are and how unappreciated it is that Alan Crabb plays 25 minutes a game and he's not good at doing basketball. Jared Dudley plays 25 minutes a game and is good at things at basketball, good at the minor stuff, but has he had double digits this year? Has he had one game more than 10 points? I don't think so. But what are you going to put? I mean, I'd ride and die with Karutz, but he's a disruptor, both good and bad. And it's tough to just throw him out there. It's tough to just put him and give him major minutes if you are trying to win games. It's a whole weird tug and pull with this team.
I guess, I mean, at this point, it is time to experiment with Fareed a little bit more than what we've been doing. It's officially time.
Yeah, I think so. But it's like the problem with the Nets is their defense, right? And Fareed is going to help you score more points and get more rebounds, which rebounding is a defensive rebound is a form of defense. But they just don't have Fareed doesn't solve the heart of the issue with the team, and Dudley probably does better defensively. I would think he like tracks better defensively in terms of, you know, being in the right position and all that other stuff that's boring to discuss and watch, but he probably does all those things better. It's like, it's just heading to a point where that's like the one thing, like I'm anti spending money just to spend money next offseason. Anti. Everyone's got to be against that. Against like filling the salary gap, the classic what the Knicks did with signing Amari. They just signed Amari Stoudemire, whatever it was, 4 years ago, because they had a big hole in their salary cap and they're just like, we got to sign someone. And it would be a disaster if the Nets did that, but the Nets got to do something. They got to get someone at the four who can like be a positive in a big way. And they just, that would alter their team so dramatically if they did.
You see, Brian Fonseca had a bit about Tobias Harris.
No, but literally as you're talking, I was Googling Tobias Harris because I was just wanting to look at his contract. What was that?
Yeah, he had a good Nets Daily article as well. Shout out to Chibroy, that had multiple links to Tobias and Brooklyn and, you know, the mutual fondness.
And he's like, so I didn't read the article, but I'm sure this was brought up in it. He's like classically a Nets player, like much discussed about his charity work. Good guy vibes, never been a problem in the locker room, a worker, a guy who's improved his game dramatically from when he got into the NBA to now, where he's a pretty valuable player.
He's having a big season, though. He's going to cost a pretty penny, Mike.
Dude, that's the scary thing. It's like, are the Nets going to enter in this world where, like, let's say they don't get... So your boy, Keith Smith, did you see what Keith tweeted? I guess it was probably a couple days ago now. He tweeted that Brooklyn is pretty high on the list of players or places players like to be. It's still New York, and Nets have one of the best arena and practice facility combinations in the NBA. Marks will get meetings with top free agents Durant and Butler, maybe even Kawhi Leonard. Now, I don't know if Keith is like reporting that. I don't think he is, that Durant and Butler's agents have told him that those two guys are going to meet with the Nets. I think the overall, what he's trying to say is just that the Nets present a really nice package, a really attractive place to play. And if you're a free agent, you're more willing to listen to what the Nets have to say than the Knicks. When the Knicks, you know, the Knicks have classically been unable to get any meetings with any star players for so many years because they don't want to. Were you calling me on? Oh, you tried to call me on Skype. I just got a notice from you from Skype.
That was a long time ago, Mike. That was another lifetime ago.
Dude, my computer is
so what POS. Are you not buying what Keith Smith is selling?
No, I am. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if I don't think is that Keith knows for a fact that Durant's going to be with Brooklyn. I don't think he's going to say that. I don't think he's saying that. I just think he's saying the Nets are going to get meetings with top free agents. But off of Tobias Harris' point is that, like, are you comfortable in a world if, like, we're paying Tobias Harris $25 million? Is that a world that you want to live in? I know we haven't really thought about this yet, but is that where you want to be? Let's say 3 years, $75 million. Is that where you want to be living?
Golly.
I know. It's tough because I don't even know if I want to live in that world. I would be... Because there's a ceiling with paying Tobias Harris, who I love. We just kissed his butt the whole way. There's a ceiling to what.
Yeah, I mean, like, he fills a gap in a position that we so desperately need. But is he the missing piece to put us into actual competitive basketball worlds? I don't think so. Unfortunately, I don't think that he takes that kind of primetime role on any of the teams that he's been on. despite having great numbers and always improving his game year over year, like, you know, you don't want to get into one of those positions where it's like Kemba Walker, who's just like slowly grown into one of the top 10 players in the NBA and miss out on that, you know, potential. But
right, right.
What are the odds that it happens with Tobias? I think less. I think it's less likely than what was happening with Kemba. By the way, have you been watching Kemba Walker?
Just his stat lines, just enjoying every stat line I see coming out from him. Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of Charlotte and a lot of Milwaukee games for whatever reason, and they played the other night. Milwaukee is too much fun to watch. Are people watching them still?
Yeah, people should be watching them, and our boy Brook Lopez was on that list of guys who are shooting more than
five. Dude, he's getting so many minutes and doing so little, but it's like he's so front and center. It's amazing.
So it's like it's super enjoyable. I just want people to go to NBA.com, ESPN.com, wherever you want to go. Just look at the NBA standings. It is mind-boggling, Brian, the turnover that's already happened. I mean, it's early, yes, small sample size, a quarter of the season. Things can change so much. You know, a team goes on a five-game win streak, it's completely different. But it's like the Clippers are leading the West. They are scoring more points per game than the Warriors are. Memphis is doing well. The Nuggets are doing well, of course. I mean, the Nuggets were pretty good last year. Milwaukee is now this offensive juggernaut where from last year they were like this pigeonholed offensive team that was just all based around Giannis doing everything. And now they're just like this like gorgeous sort of like dominating offensive force.
Even my boy it's Pat Connaughton, who I've been like just weirdly keeping an eye on because he sort of fascinates me because he's one of the few like also baseball player guys. And I don't know, even he's like breaking out a little bit, having a bit of a role. Like it's just a super fun team to watch right now.
It is going to be what's interesting is that like the Nets are doing the exact same thing. They had been doing now the past 2 years, but it's just the rest of the NBA is like all doing the thing that the Nets have been doing. And of course, like the, you know, there's teams before the Nets that started this trend, but just that it's like where before like the Nets could win a few games by playing teams that just played the wrong style of basketball. Those teams are going away, right? Like pretty much everyone's just playing the way the Nets should be playing basketball.
The thing is also watching Brook Lopez, I'm just reminded of like exactly what he just boxes people into oblivion and he never ever really attempts to go for a rebound. He's the perfect people killed him for years. And now he's even given up the pretense that he cares about rebounds. It's great. he's like finally become the optimized version of himself.
Next email.
Your boy Andre J. Thanks for hitting us up, Andre. If you're not familiar with him, it's time. Rui Hakimura of Japan is a forward from Gonzaga I've been tracking since his freshman year. After breaking out in the tournament last year, he's been picking up where he left off with an incoming who wants to keep a incoming owner, I think is what he says, who wants to keep a foothold in the Asian markets. This prospect also makes sense as well. What do you guys think? Andre from Jersey. I don't watch college basketball. I've made it clear and nothing about that's going to change. But Mike, presumably you do.
I saw him play against Duke because Gonzaga played Duke in Maui before Thanksgiving. I think it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is when that game happened, maybe the Tuesday before. Ryu is super intriguing big man. I couldn't tell you much
more. That's how you pronounce it? Ryu?
I think. I don't know. I've seen it both
ways. R-U-I? Really?
I've heard it very differently. I will say this. Like,
you've just been playing too much Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if like, I don't know if the Nets aren't going to be in position to get this guy. I don't think because it's like he's a top seven. Maybe the Nets will be the seventh worst pick in the NBA.
Bro, you know how the new odds work too. I think where our chances of getting to like, you know, deep positioning in the draft is better and better every day.
Well, so before. You could get into the top three. I think now you can get into the top five. It's either top five or six. And the odds, and we figured this out, and I'll pull them back up later. Like, basically, if you are going to tank, you want to be within the top seven because the odds are somewhat flat, and then after the top seven, it drops off more and more, like at a steeper-ish rate. It's still not dramatic, not as dramatic as before. So you want to basically be in the top seven. So I guess if the Nets are the seventh worst team in the NBA, they'll have a shot. To be honest, though, like, I don't want to say that tanking's done with the Nets, but you would think, and they have lost three games in a row, so maybe we're in the middle of a tanking, not a tanking fiesta, but a big slide. But the Nets have, like, done okay without Caris LeVert. They've won some games, and this would be the moment that it would the tanking beast would really come out of the closet and say, I'm here, I'm living outside the closet now, this is where I'm going to be. Because I don't know how I came up with that. That was a weird analogy. Mm-hmm. But this would be the time, right, Brian? Like, Caris LeVert's out for a month, 2 months maybe. If the Nets go on a 10-game losing streak, that would pretty much define their season. That isn't happening quite yet. You know, they could win. And they have a very interesting schedule stretch coming up, which I tweeted about, which we can talk about later because it's not that interesting, but we can talk about that later.
Next up, Cheerboy.
Yep.
GNYR.
Oh, that's our guy. That's
royalty. Nets fan royalty. This is going to lead to a conversation that's going to hurt my heart, but we got to do it. I am a big RHJ fan. I had high hopes for him since his rookie season. However, his time on the Nets should come to an end.
Wow.
He has no future on this team because of his lack of three-point shooting. Kudix is a better system fit than RHJ going forward. I've been looking at some teams who could possibly use a non-shooting defensive player: Indiana, Denver, Houston, and San Antonio. I'm not saying that RHJ is a bad player. He just does not fit what the Nets are doing, and it's a hindrance when you can play RHJ and Ed Davis together, when you can't play them together. The Nets at least need four shooters on the court to operate their system. So, just going through and looking at his stats from, like, since he came back, like, this is a problem, unfortunately. There's something up with Rondé, like...
Yeah, I need to see his mid-range shooting, because what made him so good last year was his mid-range.
Yeah.
Like, that made him valuable.
Everything is significantly down. This is my thing, but his free throw percentage was 78 last year. It's 62 thus far into the season. A significant drop-off just across the board percentage-wise. Field goal percentage is down to 41% from 47 last year. You know, just big... Big stuff. It's still early. He's still coming back or whatever, but we're at the point now where you need those minutes to, you know, amount to something. We need to get some kind of production out of him. And it's really hard to see a guy coming back from injury like that and struggle in this way, because it's pretty conspicuously, like, you know, between the ears, I hate to say again.
Everything just feels like with pretty much every player on the Nets, there's, like, such tension, because it feels like every possession matters so much, because the margin of victory or the margin of losing is so small that it's like no guy, even this team really shouldn't have playoff aspirations, that it's a developing team, that everyone should be pretty much carefree. There's just a pressure this year that didn't exist before. And it's like before this season, Rondé not playing well, okay, he would have had room to breathe a little bit and grow into being back to the guy that he was at least last season. It doesn't feel like we have that luxury as much anymore. Like, it just doesn't, like, it really kind of burns that he's not helping out the team again, especially because LeVert's out. Like, LeVert being out alters the bench point scoring, because LeVert would play with the bench unit sometimes, and like it stresses everyone out in all these little directions. And but then again, like, who do you go to? Is it Kurucs? Is it our guy? Does he get more playing time? Does he deserve more playing time? But then if you do give him more playing time, let's say he isn't any good, then you have to go back to Rondé. And I just think Kenny Atkinson values some level of stability. Like, he values having, I said this before, but he was on Francesa to start the year, and he said, I think 10 guys is probably too much. I think 9 is about the perfect number of guys that should be playing basketball for a team. Or, you know, 9 or 10. And, okay, if that's the case and that's what he believes, he probably then believes that he shouldn't be, like, altering guys' minutes to such a tremendous degree that, like, Rondé's going to play 25 minutes one game and then nothing another because he stunk. You know what I mean?
I think the Rondé thing is kind of twofold. I think, obviously, like, he's playing out of position now. You know, he's playing 4 and 5 when his natural position is probably a 3. And that's not ideal. But also, he, you know, all of that kind of the big steps that he took to improve his game last year came from just pace. He slowed it down. He became like an operator in the half court. And now he's trying to do what he did in the first season or two, which was like always trying to take his the larger defender, invariably larger defender, off the dribble, ending in some kind of spastic layup attempt that like ultimately kind of doesn't ever look like it's going to work out. And he's gone back to that model again. You feel like he's trying to will something that doesn't exist in his skill set. And he needs to get back to the, like, you know, those turnaround Jays that were falling for him last year. He needs to get back to slowing it down instead of, like attacking it. But it's I mean, this is obviously, it's annoying for me to say this because I've been going on about how our pace is so slow for, you know, a team that should on paper be playing a lot faster and, or like by like the sort of money ball standards of modern basketball should be playing faster. But the one player that can't fall into that trap is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yep. It's a tough situation with, and he's part of the power forward problem because he is a power forward for this team. I mean, I haven't looked at the minutes, but I can't imagine he really ever plays the three. He never plays with like two big men. It's always he is a four, and he could be an answer at the four on some level, but he's just not playing well. But again, it's the whole like 20 games into the season.
Oop, I lost you.
Hope that he finds himself in some way at some point. I mean, ultimately, I think we both kind of already recognized that he wasn't going to be on this team. The only reason why he would be on this team past this season would be if, like, he's such a great presence and he took, like, such a small contract that it was just like, yeah, like $3 million a year. Be like, yeah, we'll have Rondae for another two seasons at $3 million a year each. Like, that is the sort of scenario where it works. His value, he's never had trade value, really, around the league. It would be tough for me to imagine a team like offering anything for Rondae at this point, you know. But, you know, and that sort of makes me want to hold on to him and just keep playing him and see what happens. So,
you know, it's amazing.
What?
I lost connection, reset my internet, and came back on all while you were talking. Didn't even notice.
Unbelievable. It actually doesn't surprise me. Because I've been blabbering.
When
on
it came
and
back,
on.
Your eyes were rolling in the back of your head. The stream of conscience was.
Yeah, and it's. So Brian and I are recording this like when we got off. I got off work. Brian's always working, always grinding. There's like a different vibe. I think you could like track the vibes of our pod when we do them. Like we do a 10 a.m. pod before the workday really begins for a lot of people. And that's like we're pretty spry. We're trying to get out our energy for the day. This is a 4:30 p.m. pod. And this is like the I'm spinning it out, man. We are just putting it out there. There's not much foreplay between us right now, unfortunately.
I always feel a lot less connected in the early ones. I feel like, you know, it takes me a long time to get up. I'm a pretty slow, pretty groggy dude. And I feel it takes all of my brain power, 500%, to even like complete a sentence when we're doing those 10 a.m.ers. So I'm happy. I'm fired up, you know?
Do we have any other emails or can I do my schedule bit?
Please, go ahead.
Okay, so this is, I tweeted this out, so if you want to kind of see a clearer breakdown of what I'm talking about, go to @BKGlueGuys on Twitter. But basically, very interesting stretch that's coming up for the Nets, okay? So I'm talking about, that we're recording this on a Tuesday, so the first game coming up is a home game against Utah. Basically, from this home game against Utah until, and I'll scroll all the way down, until going to Chicago on the 19th of December. So that's about 3 weeks' time. The Nets are not going to play a game outside what I like to call the Acela Corridor, Brian. If you read Politico.com, you'll know about the Acela Corridor. That is between Washington and Boston. It would be Washington, Philly, New York City, and Boston. That's the Acela Corridor.
What does that mean? Like, what's the word Acela in reference to?
Acela is the high-class speed train from Amtrak.
Ah, I see.
That's the more expensive, faster train, you know, that people go on, whatever. It goes between D.C. so to Boston.
People go on the train is what you're telling me.
People are on this train. It's a people train.
Good.
And the Nets actually don't even go to Boston. They're the only road games that the Nets have between now and that Chicago at Chicago, December 19th, at Washington, which is a Saturday, and then they come back on Monday and play Cleveland. at the Knicks, at the 76ers, and that's it. Those are the only road games. All super manageable. Everyone should be pretty well rested considering that they're not flying all over the country. There's a lot of home games in there. There's games against Cleveland. And then if you even go past the Chicago game, there's then after that one game at Chicago, three home games in a row, then it's at Charlotte and at Milwaukee to finish up the month of December. So you basically have an entire month where it's either a home game or a road game against the Eastern Conference. Chicago's the furthest trip you have to go to. You know, Milwaukee's comparable, but, you know, Milwaukee, Chicago within that month. A lot of Eastern Conference teams, a lot of the teams that the Nets are technically competing against. This, like, month stretch from now until basically New Year's Eve is a crucial time for the Nets to hopefully pick up some more wins. And we should know pretty distinctly what type of team the Nets are by the end of this month. So check back in January, and we'll tell you what kind of team the Nets are. So take a look at that, Brian, and you Nets fans out there, take a look, because it's going to be intriguing. Intriguing stretch.
Can we talk about your Wiz? What's going on with them? You. Did you watch that Rockets game last night?
No, I was watching. Can I tell
what?
You?
So, oh my gosh, what happened?
I'm trying to get into the fantasy football playoffs in a minute. I'm in a 16 team league with my friends from high school. Intensely competitive. I was in last place last year, which is called the Littleton. I was the Littleton last year. You have to carry around a plaque with you for the whole year. Well, you just put it, you know, in your apartment. But so I'm going for the playoffs. I'm in the sixth seed playoffs, but I lost last night because I had a guy on the Texans who pulled his hamstring. But Sam and I got in a fight because of it, because I yelled out like an expletive or something when the guy got hurt. And she said, Sam's my wife. She said that was stupid, that I cared about it. And I said, why do you want to make me feel bad about fantasy football? I already feel bad enough. So I did not watch the Wiz. But they won. They won, Brian.
How angry were you? I mean, like, you know, there's – be honest. I mean, I've seen you angry, too, and I know how triggered you can get.
I actually wasn't even that bad, but it wasn't that bad. It was a moment of anger. But Sam's been through those battles with me, the battles of being angry about the Redskins or the Wizards at times. I'm done with the Wizards in terms of, like, anger. I don't have it anymore.
So scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the soundboard's not working. where are we?
It was a 3. It was a 3.
Oh, that's nothing. But, get off his case.
But from her perspective, to be angry at all about fantasy football is not justifiable. So I understood. I understood where she was coming from. She did not understand where I was coming from. So, you know, we got into a fight. And, you know, I sat, you know, on my end of the bed for like 10 minutes. Had to cool down. But anyways, the Wizards. Still a train wreck. I don't care if they win basketball games. Still a train wreck, right? Like, once those scars have been opened, there isn't, like, if God forbid if they keep winning, and then there's going to be alleged story of how they had John Wall and Bradley Beal had a kumbaya moment. We were going to pod. You and I were going to pod last week. And I had like a bunch of Bradley Beal trades to the Nets.
Doesn't seem like that's going to be the guy, does it?
I don't think so. I would
that's
say
like the one guy that they should keep out of everybody.
It should be, but he's the one guy that they can get actually something for. Like, John Wall is untradeable right now. Even though I still don't agree with that, like I think
here's the thing: you can find a dumb meme team to take. Like the Knicks will take John Wall in a heartbeat.
Absolutely, that's the thing. You're gonna find there's so many teams with the cap space. John Wall is still considered a star in some way. You're gonna find a team if he just like doesn't get hurt and he plays comparable to how he's played before, like ish. There's gonna be a team like the Suns or the Knicks or the Kings. I mean, the Kings probably not because they have De'Aaron Fox, but you're just going to find a team that's going to want him. You want, but like, Brad Beal is the guy that the Nets, he is the perfect net in every way in terms of like he's actually a good teammate, unlike John Wall, and he shoots threes, and he's young and he does all the things right. He's won, he's done well in playoff games. But I don't think, I just don't think the Nets are going to want to pull the trigger because they'd have to end up actually giving up assets. People got mad at me when I suggested that they may have to give up Jared Allen for Brad Beal. And I think people need to realize, like, if you get a guy like Bradley Beal who has two more years left on his contract after this season at, like, not an unreasonable rate, $25 million a year, guy who's an all-star, all that baloney, you know, you have to give up two first-round picks or a really good young player and whatever. You know, you need to give up something. He's a valuable dude. Yeah, I kind of want my Wizards to explode, man. I just hope that the Nets don't trade for Otto Porter. I've said this many times.
Good. Well, we'll broach all that in much greater detail as those things, you know, begin to really unravel.
Yeah, we'll broach later. All right.
Take us out of here, Mike.
Thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you could, go on iTunes. Just click on iTunes. Click on our page. Go to the stars. 5 stars. We want them. We need them. We have to have them. Buy every product that is advertised on our show. Buy it 10 times over. Cyber Monday's over. I don't care. Buy every product possible. Brian?
Mike, thanks for having me, bud. I feel really at home in your presence.
Glad to be with you.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah, boy!